Good afternoon. Let me put my headset on there. There, that's why it just sounded funny. Oh, good afternoon and welcome to We the People. We have one of those shows today. I was a little stumped on the music. Not sure what we're going to do for music with a topic about communism. So we have June with us today. She grew up in communist China. So we're not going to talk about what it might be like or what it could be like. Or if we just did communism better, how great it would be here. That kind of thing. We're not doing that. And the second hour, we have Nan Su with us, who is a reporter with the Epoch Times. And we're going to chat about forced organ harvesting, another benefit of communism. So you're going to get the whole picture today. I hope you stick with us for the full 2 hours. You can find everything about our program at wethepeopleradio.us. And we have all the archives dating back to October of 2010. Go figure. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And today our sponsor is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They're up on Twin View Boulevard at 3119 and just south of Phil's Propeller. And their phone number is 226-9226. Or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com. Anything you need for tractors, go up and see them. They're very well versed and parts sales service. They do it all.
Mowers, utility vehicles, tractors.
Tractors.
Everything.
Yeah.
And they're all green and orange.
Come today.
You can't miss them.
And that's not all.
No, wait, not today. Today's Sunday.
Go tomorrow. Oh, yeah, that's right. Don't come today.
Don't delay, go tomorrow. Yeah, that kind of wrecks it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And thank you to all the individual people who sponsor the show. We really appreciate you. Because without you, obviously, we don't have a show. So happy to have anybody jump in at any time. Sponsorship-wise, there's information on the site. And topic-wise, we're always looking for your input. Actually, we had a screw-up with the archives last week, and I had a listener who let me know. By the way, I can't. Is there a reason I can't download? It's like, I don't know.
I forgot.
I was thinking, well, maybe it's your computer, right? I go there. It's like, it gives you this big page that said there's a security warning, blah, blah, blah. It was just a little change was made, and it was actually made more secure. But the computer doesn't know that, so all it tells you is, you know, your giant virus is coming to eat your computer. So for all of you who got the crazy warning, that's all gone. We fixed it. We actually lowered the security and solved the problem.
Yeah, so, I can even log on now.
Yeah, go make sense of that.
Yeah.
So thanks to Tony who clued us in on that one. So always happy to hear from you. Don't assume we know everything because, well, we don't. And I thought we made that perfectly clear. In our bumbling beginnings, I thought that was a dead giveaway.
I don't think you have to announce
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I thought that was a dead giveaway, but yeah. Maybe not. Okay, so that's all the housekeeping that I can think of. Have I missed anything? Anyone?
No,
anyone?
I think I think you got it all.
All right, so now we're going to go on a journey from communism. That's the important part. So she was there from communism, and I'm dying to hear the rest of the story. I heard June speak at an Eagle Forum event several months ago, and I think she only had 15 minutes. I was like, what? We should have been listening to this the whole day.
Now we are.
Super interesting story. So June is a former member of the Chinese Communist Party because she lived there as a child, grew up there. She shares her journey from indoctrination by the Chinese government to an unvarnished understanding of American freedom and liberty.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a trip. So,
yeah, you get to hear it firsthand here, folks.
So good afternoon, June.
Good afternoon, Aaron.
All right. So you've got Bill and I rapt attention, and we promise not to interrupt unless we have to take a break in 5 minutes. But except for that.
That's guaranteed.
It's all you.
All right. Thank you, Aaron and Bill. It's my pleasure to be here. So let me just get started. Just level set. You know, DNC chairman Tom Perez, everyone knows him. He calls the socialist candidate the future of Democratic Party. And I think since the 2016 Bernie Sanders campaign, more young Americans now have a positive view of socialism than they do of capitalism. But here's the little secret. I'm not sure if everyone knows that socialism is really the younger brother of communism. And China has always officially claimed to be a socialist country. So I was actually born and raised in China, the largest city over there. And as one of the elite students from a top university over there, I joined the Communist Party before I even graduated. The school wanted someone to fill the quota. I had this professor just chase after me every day because I was considered one of the elite, and he really wanted to recruit me to become to join the party. And I felt like, hey, you know, it wouldn't hurt because I wanted to use it to my advantage. And, you know, things went a certain way over there. So if you wanted to be successful, sometimes you really have to do things that, you know, view it as political. So I agree. And I felt like, hey, I always believed that communism is the savior of China. So why not?
And you were how old at that point?
I was the freshman of, back then, like 18.
Okay.
Yeah. And then so in my early 20s, after I graduated from the college over there, I really wanted to have a better career. And one way to do that is really to come to the United States. So it took me a year to prepare for everything and then applied for it legally and then came here to the United States. In order to assimilate to American culture, I really try hard to talk and act like American. In fact, I remind myself, every day. But I found that one thing really, really hard to do, almost impossible, was really to have my brain to process like American. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't think like American. And later I found that was because I had been indoctrinated by the propaganda from Beijing for so long, that I didn't even know how to think independently in this free country, you know, without the guidance of the propaganda from the government.
I imagine so, trust was kind of tough for you, just trusting the whole system after what you'd been taught.
You figured they were probably secretly, controlling you in some way.
Oh, yeah, that part as well, yeah. So, and then I have to explain why is that? I mean, people are like, you know, why are you guys are like robots? And then, you know, it's your brain process like the government wants you to. Well, in China, politics is a mandatory course that everyone has to study. Once you go to middle school, then you start that politics, the education. And it goes with you all the way to high school or college graduation. And even at workforce, periodically, you have to spend your Friday afternoon just to study the lectures from the latest lectures from the leaders, just to try to get up to speed on what's going on, the latest in the party, in the politics and everything. So that politics, that course that praises Marxism and all the iconic leaders of the Communist parties. And it teaches you its own version of the Communist Party history as well as the world history. So up to this day, you know, you may laugh, but I still remember some of the phrases that are recited over and over, such as I said earlier, that the Communist Party was the savior of China and that Dalai Lama was a terrorist and a separatist. And here's the interesting part, that all the people living in the Western world were all suffering, or in other words, in dire straits.
So when you came here and looked around, it's like, where are they hiding all the suffering, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, wow, everyone's great. I mean, where's this suffering? But the indoctrination is just so deeply ingrained. And it's just hard to, I guess over the course of time, it gradually kind of loosened up. But the core, the fundamental piece remained in there. And so I'd have to say that, it had a tight grip on me the first 10 years I lived here. I came to this country. I actually met a really good friend from Taiwan, just to give you a little bit of the, how silly I was back then. And so one day, I was stupid enough to decide to go into this serious debate with her over Taiwan's independence. I literally used all the words that I learned from years and years of my political education on her. And you can imagine how well that debate went. her face turned green, and she was so angry at me, she almost punched me in my face, I kid you not. But I was just like, what? You're just like a snowflake. You couldn't handle the truth. Come on, I'm telling you the truth, because this is 100% true. Because I learned how to recite that when I was a little kid. This has to be true. Taiwan has to be part of China. So, it's just, that's just to show you how silly I was the first 10 years I lived in this country.
Well,
Well,
I was going to say, when they told you, I mean, so what was the explanation for Taiwan not being part of China? Were they just crazy people who wandered away?
Yeah, well, they said the party leader escaped, right, after they lost a war here in mainland China, and they escaped there. But the reason they said was, hey, Taiwan has always been part of China, if you look at the history. So if we cannot separate Taiwan from the rest of the mainland China, it has always been, and it should be. And so that's the propaganda we're all, told.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. We're going to take a really quick break and celebrate some capitalism. Go figure, right?
Yeah.
Right here in our communism show.
Here we go.
You are listening to We the People. Join us in 2 minutes at wethepeopleradio.us.
Fitting.
Yeah. So for 20
plus years, you thought the world was one way.
Yes. Yes, and, very much so.
And we've seen, I mean, let's face it, you've lived here long enough now, our exposure to what really goes on in China is pretty limited. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I immediately think of all the little kids wearing the uniforms and speaking in unison and all of that. And that was you.
Yeah, that was me.
Is it weird now to look back on that and go, God, that was me?
Yes. Seems to me it's like, a century ago.
Yeah.
But hey, this is after you feel enlightened and you look back and, you just felt like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that.
But anyway.
That must have been a huge enlightenment.
Sorry, we don't want to blow your story. So, sorry, keep going.
No, I was going to say that that was me, if you believe it or not, the first 10 years I lived in this free country, I had the same mindset as about living in China. And I wasn't alone. There are millions of us who come to this country to pursue the American dream, but only at the surface level. Our minds are still heavily influenced by communist and socialist ideology.
Mm.
And I think you will tend to find that it's true. You go to Chinatown, you go to anywhere, the area is heavily, occupied by Chinese, and you look around, you ask, their views of China, their views of our American policies, you're gonna get a very different view.
Is it because they don't trust our system totally, or is it just because that's all they were taught? And that's all they know, and they don't want to lose that, or what is it?
It's a combination of indoctrination and also what I call it is the blindsided patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like, hey, China is on the rise, and I feel really proud to be Chinese, and hey, I want to defend the country.
Right.
And our system is awesome, only that's why we live in America. That's confusing.
And you have this freedom of speech to some extent.
was that bizarre when you came here? I mean,
that you could just say anything
kind of
or go anywhere.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. You know, before I came out, I actually worked for an American company for 2 years. And then that was the reason I wanted to come here. I didn't want to have curfew. I had curfew because my parents, like, you know, I'm the only child, and they wanted to, you know, really to protect me, so to speak. I wanted to have freedom. So that was like, hey, this is cool. I can drive. I can go anywhere I want. I can, you know, make friends. All that is awesome. But all the stuff that I told you earlier about, you know, the communism and the savior of China, that Taiwan should be part of China and all that stuff, and then to a certain extent, there's a capitalism, there's evil. It was still in me. It was like, you know, it was hard to remove that because before I came here, I had almost 10 years of that education. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't take overnight to erase that completely.
Sure. So what was the...
Yeah.
What was the, I don't know, did you have a turning point, or was it just after a while?
Yes. Huh? I know, right? People would ask me, so what happened to you?
Yeah,
right. Did something whack on your head, and then you were like, oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, so in January 2008, actually 10 years ago, that's interesting, being here for 20 years, and then my turning point exactly at the middle of that. I came across a performing arts group called Shenyun. You've probably seen it. It's spelled S-H-E-N-Y-U-N. I'm sure you've seen its ads from billboards or newspapers. It is a world-class nonprofit performing arts group based in New York, not from China. See, I didn't know that. Before I saw that show, I was pretty arrogant because I've been to symphonies in Vienna, operas in Italy, and musicals in Broadway. So I just felt like that was one of those shows. But that day, as I sat there to watch the show, I had tears streaming down my face. I was really shocked. I was shocked by the beauty of the show, and more importantly, the spirituality of the Chinese culture that I had long forgotten. What Shenyun presented on stage was so different from the party culture, that Communist Party culture that I grew up with. Let me give you you know, some example here. Those values like loyalty, compassion, filial piety, righteousness, selflessness, tolerance, and even reverence for heaven. You know, communism is atheism, and reverence for heaven was kind of new to me. So it was like rediscovering my own heritage and reconnecting to the traditional Chinese values and beliefs.
Reconnecting to your heritage, less the communism.
Yes. Less the communism, correct.
Right.
That my true heritage without any influence of communism. My heritage went back 5,000 years ago and has created some splendor in this entire history. And communism only took over China for the last probably 100 years. So that mm-hmm. does not represent the true heritage, the true Chinese culture. But I didn't know any better before I went to see the show because once we started going to school and then all we were fed was all those party propaganda, and even the culture, the history, everything was all filtered, was all you know, edited. So
a big part of that was rewriting the history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, interesting.
So. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
What
I have to say, yeah.
Oh no, I was just going to say, any particular historical things that after you started doing a little looking, it was like, wait a second. That's not how that worked.
Yes, there are a lot. But I have to say that you may find it interesting, but Aaron Dale, for the first time in my life, at that moment when I sat there in the theater, I truly felt it was an honor to be Chinese. Because, you know, before I was like, hey, I work for an American company, and now I came to the United States. I work for a high-tech company. You know, the copyright, the plagiarism, all that stuff, made me feel like I'm ashamed of claiming to be Chinese. You know, there are certain things that I say that I do not agree and that I don't mm-hmm. want to just volunteer to tell people that I'm Chinese. I'm ashamed of it. But that moment, I was like, I look around, I really wanted to tell everyone in the news that, do you know that I am Chinese? Do you know that my culture is part of that you're seeing right now on the stage? And, you know, I had that emotion. So it was fascinating to me myself. But I have to tell you that I was also shocked, not only by the beauty, but also by also the values and the traditional values and the belief, but also I was shocked because of the courage of this performing arts group. Because in addition to the grand display of the 5,000 years of Chinese civilization, there were a few dance snippets featuring what I call the modern-day heroes in face of persecution. And I didn't know anything about that persecution. I thought everything was perfect, fantastic, rosy, because, you know, that's what my government told me.
Mm-hmm.
So that day, after the show, as I walked out, I had this burning question of finding out who was lying and who was telling me the truth. It intrigued me to start my own research. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty interesting. So you started looking at the things that they portrayed and thought, wait a second.
Yes. So that was the tipping point, because before I wasn't interested in finding out the truth because I felt everything I knew was the truth. There was no point for me to do any research. But that show kind of intrigued me and say, wait a second. This is so beautiful, so pure, so, you know, so authentic. However, the message that they portray here about the modern day, you know, the struggle, everything, it's a bit contradictory to what my government has been all along telling me. So I really wanted to figure out.
Right. Now, if you had lived in China, first of all, you would probably never see that performance. And secondly, you couldn't have researched the truth living in China.
That's 100% correct, Bill, because two facts. A is because that show cannot go to China. Second of all is because the censorship in China. Even if you are interested, you're curious, because of the internet censorship, you won't be able to find out the truth. Right? So that is what we don't often realize is that, yes, you know, we have fake news and we have mass media bias here in this free country. But if you're willing to dig, you're still able to access abundant uncensored information on the internet.
Sure.
And that is one of the fundamental differences between this country and China.
Now, the internet isn't completely open in China? I mean, you can't...
No. This is why Facebook is not allowed.
Right.
This is why originally Google backed out of China, if you remember, a few years ago.
But now they're talking about, they're going to go back in and play by China's rules.
Right.
Which
really, means no one learns anything again.
Yeah, but that's okay with Google. Yeah, that's a shame. Because China, their written history goes back thousands of years. I mean, we look at the American history. Our history goes back, you know, 250, 300 years, and that's it. But the Chinese culture goes back thousands of years, and it's documented. So it wouldn't be hard to research that and find out who you really are.
The bad part is a lot of the history they don't want the actual people in China to know about.
No.
Good, bad, or indifferent.
Everything that you learn, everything you learn about a Chinese history back there is all just, you know, all biased or specially edited to advance the party's benefits and the agenda. There's nothing true about those history because they interpret it in a very different way. They look at it through the lens of class struggle. They criticize everything because they feel like it's A, they call it superstition, and then B, they call it, you know, hey, back then there was suppression, there was oppression because, you know, there's the emperor and there was the elite class and there was some, you know, the common class being ruled by those, and then therefore everything to them was all about class struggle, was all about the foundation of communism. So you won't be able to learn anything true about that because, you know, again, like I said earlier, about the splendor of the Chinese culture and history.
Right.
It very much like what I see right now in our schools. I mean, if we do not know our own history, the true history, how would you be able to discern?
Right. And the Chinese government at this point, you know, they've taken away all that struggle and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is fine now.
Yeah, so, man, look here. Hey, when we come back, I got to hear the story when you learned about what Tiananmen Square really was. Maybe you could tell us that, because that was a real eye-opener, and that's a point in history that really pretty much everyone should know the truth of. And I'm very interested for people to hear what you were actually told when you lived there. You're listening to We the People. Got to take a really quick break. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
That was just a dream.
That would be a good lead in for you.
Love that song.
I thought it might come in handy today. Okay, so Tiananmen Square, how old were you when that actually happened? And you lived in China, right?
Yeah, I was young. And then I have to say that, I was very, very upset back then because I couldn't join the students that really wanted to go. But it might be a good thing because now that I survived and I came out and I learned the truth and now I become the advocate of that. But what led to that was really my discovery of Tiananmen Square was because, you know, like I said earlier, I started doing research on communism. And I want to use an analogy. And you peel onions before. Everyone who's working in the kitchen have the experience of peeling an onion. But my, self-research on communism was a very painful multi-year process for me, and it was just like peeling an onion. But only in this case, I removed layers and layers of lies. And each time when it happened, I felt devastated and, honestly speaking, betrayed. And in the end, I was able to reach the core, which was the nature of communism. And it can be described in two words, brutality and deceit. So I'm going to talk a little bit about brutality first, because it's easy, kind of easy for people to understand. According to the Black Book of Communism published by Harvard University Press, the estimated death toll from communism in the 20th century is about 100 million. Now, that includes 20 million from Russia, 65 million from China, 1 million from Vietnam, 2 million from North Korea, 2 million from Cambodia. I have to say that 2 million from Cambodia, that means 1 out of 4 Cambodians was killed during that time. And then 1 million from Eastern Europe, 1.7 million from Africa, 1.5 million from Afghanistan, and 150,000 from Latin America. Well, that totals 100 million. But many scholars believe that this is still an underestimate. The actual death toll should be close to 150 million. Take China, for instance. Many believe that it should be at least 80 million. Now, what does this number mean, the magnitude? It means more people died as a result of communism than World War I and World War II combined. In addition, it brought physical and spiritual suffering to even a greater number of people. So the hypothesis of heaven on earth dragged over 1 billion people into hell on earth.
Yeah, because that's really the whole thing is it's going to be great. The government's going to control everything. That way everybody will get what they need, and it's all going to be really super organized.
Nobody's going to be hungry. Everybody have a roof over their head.
It'll be terrific. Yeah. And then, unfortunately, 99.9% of the people have to live like serfs and have no rights.
And just to extend on nobody's going to be hungry, though, you know, the one effective way for them to kill so many people was through famine.
Exactly.
And then just to give an example here, in 1921, when a man-made famine struck Russia that killed between 5 to 10 million people, Lenin was overjoyed. He claimed that it would bring about the next step more rapidly and usher in socialism.
It's hard to wrap your mind around that a leader would stand behind famine as a way to control the people.
But it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that people now living in a free country would think that looks like a terrific future. That's the truly bizarre part.
Well, I think today people look at socialism as, well, we could make it work because we would do it differently.
Yeah,
but
we're just going to do it different.
It always turns out the same.
Yeah, is there, okay, so you've done a lot of study on communism, lived in a communist country. Does it ever turn out different?
No. And then to your point, yes, people feel like they're so smart these days. They can do it differently.
Yeah.
Communism has been tried out over 100 years by so many different countries. It always, always led to destruction. Because there are flaws in the foundation of communism. In the end, it's going to become totalitarian, and there will be a few controlling the entire nation or the entire population.
And so China has been able to hang on to this form of government for, 100 years now? But the death toll has been astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
But look what happens. Okay, so you had the students at Tiananmen Square, which is a great example.
Yeah.
What happens if a group of people rise up and want to change the system or highlight the? I'm not an expert on that event, but what happens when they step up? And what did they tell you after all these people got?
They
killed?
Squash you, right? They squash you. But what they tell us is these are the national enemies. These are the people who try to. Separate China, who try to overturn the government. And in China, it's kind of interesting that the government in a country, those two concepts are like, they are if you do not love the government, that means you do not love the country.
Oh.
So they equate the government to the country. So if you dare to speak up, then you're a traitor.
Yeah, you're not patriotic if you go against the government.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the worst thing.
Yeah. That's why, my second discovery, of the communism, the nature of communism is really master of deceit. A common technique it uses is to give intentionally false or misleading information in a calculated way to deceive target audiences. When used effectively, it can alter a person's perception of reality and events. But just to give you a personal example, before 1949, the year that the Communist Party took over China, my mom's dad, who was a so-called capitalist because he had money and he had a manufacturing plant somewhere, he hired workers. He actually had an opportunity to flee to Taiwan. He even bought plane tickets. He changed his mind the last minute and had his oldest daughter destroy the tickets. Well, guess what? During Cultural Revolution, he and his family were kicked out of their mansion, humiliated in public, and denied their basic human rights. Now, on my dad's side, my grandpa used to be a doctor and the head of a military hospital. And unlike his colleagues who fled to Germany before 1949, he decided to stay out of his patriotism, just like my other grandpa.
Right.
Well, he died in prison 1 year before I was born. So now after listening to this, you will probably think, hey, you must hate communism. But if you remember the joke that I told you earlier about my, going to the debate with this friend from Taiwan, that wasn't the case. Never did I have any doubts that without communism, there will be no new China.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a total complete product of their deceit.
Right.
Do you still find yourself kind of, do you still catch yourself? Thinking things and then going, oh, wait a minute, that's not actually real.
Yes. Trust me, Erin, it is hard. It is a process. And I'm still doing that from time to time. And then, so to go back to Tiananmen Square massacre, when did I find out about the truth? A few years ago.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
It wasn't even right away.
No. So last December, the British released newly declassified documents from then UK ambassador to China. The document reveals that at least 10,000 students were killed in Tiananmen Square massacre. It also provides horrific detail of the atrocity, such as wounded students were slaughtered as they begged for their lives. Human remains were hosed down a drain. And a mother was shot as she was trying to help her injured 3-year-old daughter. Now, all these, when I heard all those accounts, I couldn't tell you how emotional I was. And I couldn't tell you how emotional I was when just 2 years ago, before that, I saw this iconic picture of tankmen.
Right.
Remember that?
Sure, the man standing in front of the tank. Yeah.
Yes, courageously standing in front of a line of tanks. I came across a picture from the internet just 2 years ago. And at that moment, I just thought, I started bawling. I couldn't control myself. It was just, I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry out so hard because 30 years ago, while you and the rest of the world learned what was going on through the Western media, I was told by my government that the military troops were under attack. Pictures of a few dead bodies were enlarged, amplified, and broadcast by nationwide television around the clock. It was a classic example of using disinformation to make billions of Chinese believe there was no such thing as massacre. In fact, the government was portrayed as the victim. The military troops were heroes, and the students were violent killers.
It's all in your perspective. And when you lived there, you never questioned that, I'm sure.
Of course not. Of course not.
Because...
And so when I... Yeah. Because that was the only source of information that
sure.
you could get. And like I said, you know, a broadcast around the clock, through nationwide television. And then if you ask someone from mainland China these days, like my age or even younger, you ask them about Tiananmen Square Massacre, they will look at you and say, hey, that's all a conspiracy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah, you show it from one perspective. You don't allow any other ideas. And bottom line is, you can't rise up against the policies of the government because that your only choice is to rise up against the government, which means you've risen up against the country, which makes you bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty handy, actually. It's very tidy. Takes away all the debate. One last quick break here before the top of the hour. June, we'll be right back. We are discussing communism. If you haven't figured that out, you can find all of our information at wethepeopleradio.us.
About it on the radio. Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Dreams that you dream of, dreams really do come true. Ooh, someday you wish upon a star, wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like lemon drops, high above the chimney top, that's where.
That's what happens when Bill tries to jump the gun. He chokes. He choked.
Well, I just have a hard time wrapping my mind around
all of it.
How so many people can be deceived for such a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's
there's,
amazing.
But there's never an option. There's never a break. It isn't like you're only a communist when you're at school. This goes on at home and everywhere. This is 24/7.
From cradle to grave. That's
so
how I see it.
When people disappear or, you know, because I know the next hour we're going to talk about a lot of the truly unpleasant side of communism, besides the mind game, which, I don't know, it's hard to decide which is worse. But what happens when people disappear or have their organs harvested against their will?
You go against the government, you say something,
And then
what happens? Somebody just shows up at your door and they take you away?
Yeah, they take you away. They throw you into those jails or concentration camps, labor camps, whatever you call it, and they're all the same. And then because the local newspapers never report on that, you wouldn't know.
But, only I mean, those, let's just say it's your next-door neighbor. Don't you sort of notice they're missing?
Yeah, but guess what? After so many years of being ruled by communism, you kind of have already developed a fear. Right?
Oh.
So if you didn't go through the Cultural Revolution your parents went through, if you didn't go through all those sufferings, I mean, someone else, so your family or friends circles went through that, and you have already been trained to be really careful not to stick your neck out because, you know what's going to happen. You saw that before. So there's definitely a fear factor in that. And also, with the very powerful propaganda, then, you literally... There's no way out.
No.
And then that's how I, as I continue my research on communism, I really started having chills because I realized that not only communism is in those communist countries, but it has been silently infiltrating in the Western world.
Well, right now in our schools, in our colleges, in our some of our communities, socialism. Yeah. I mean, we just elected a socialist. Yeah. Senator, Congress lady, I don't know what she is.
Member of the House, yeah.
So she's a devout socialist, and now she is part of our government. And people think that's okay. I mean, there seems to be more and more people that, for whatever reason, seem to think that let's try the socialism one more time because we can do it better than anybody else. What would you say to those people? What would you tell them to look out for? Warn them.
I would say, go back to the history. And I would say that, go back to in 1963. Some of you have probably heard of this, Cleon Skelton's book, The Naked Communist. On January 10th, 1963, Congressman of Florida read a list of 45 communist goals into the congressional record. And that list was derived from Cleon Skelton's book, The Naked Communist, was originally published in 1958. Now, Skelton was a former FBI agent and later served as the chief of police for Salt Lake City. It was during this four-year service that he wrote his national bestseller, The Naked Communist. And I have to say that this guy had incredible inner knowledge of what was going on. He didn't make this up for, in this book, he laid out the entire agenda of communism for overthrowing the United States, and that was, again, written in 1958.
Wow.
So
I put in the 45 goals that you gave us, and some of them, it's like stuff you read, as you read down through the list, you go, okay,
and then you get to the one, continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. Mm-hmm. An American communist cell was told to eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings and substitute shapeless, awkward, and meaningless forms.
Wow. And it's that today.
You see these things and you're like, what the heck? How does that?
Yeah.
How can
exactly.
that be?
It slowly just weaves its way in.
Yeah. And so people ask me the question to say, okay, I can see all those stuff, infiltrate the press and do this and that. Get control of the political party. But why do they want to attack art? So if you go to the Communist Manifesto, it states that communism abolishes eternal truth. It abolishes all religion and all morality. You see, art and morality are interconnected. Fine art plays a guiding role with respect to our concepts in our society, influencing our aesthetic values, which are closely related to our moral foundation and standards. And this is why they want to do this.
Well, it also stomps out independence and creativity, and it stomps all that out.
Beauty, when you see things that are beautiful, you dream dreams. I mean, you want a better life. You
try to create that.
You think of all those things when you see these globs on some, city hall front lawn. You look at the glob and you think, huh. I mean that there's
I'm
no
so enlightened.
There's no inspiration coming from or like the sticks that are all going a different direction. I could think of about a million of them. It's like, what the heck?
I know.
I just thought that was fascinating. That actually is part. I was thrilled it actually meant something, because honestly, there's part of me that's like, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I want to get it, but I don't get it. Now that I get it, actually, I kind of wish I didn't. But
yeah. And I also want to call out the rule number 31. I think it's very important. It says that it belittle or forms American culture and discourage the teaching of American history on the ground that it was only a minor part of the big picture.
That's right. Get rid of all that stupid American history. It was a tiny blip in and look at, so get rid of statues that whether you like what the person did or dislike what the person did, they were part of American history, and it caused you to go learn a little bit. But let's get rid of all those reminders and sanitize all of that.
Yeah, and then, you know, learning American history is not just a process of understanding how our nation was established. It is also a process of understanding what kind of values the nation was built upon and what it takes to preserve those traditions.
Exactly.
So to me, forgetting history is the same as destroying tradition.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's the same thing with Chinese history. They've stomped that out, and don't look back there. That's meaningless. We'll teach you what's important. And you lose all that culture.
I thought 38 and 39 were pretty spooky, too. We're coming up at the top of the hour, but I didn't want to let it go by. Transfer some of the powers of arrest from police to social agencies. Treat all behavior problems as psychiatric disorders.
Yeah.
Hey, look at that. It's like, okay, that's totally...
Well, you're crazy, so we'll have to take care of you.
Yeah, that's totally coming.
And then look at number 40. Discredit the family as an institution. Encourage, you know...
Oh, yeah, promiscuity and easy divorce. Well, all you have to do, and there's one above it about television, you know, make everything pornography and obscenity and books and motion pictures. Well, I think we've actually can check that one off the list.
Mm-hmm.
Can't watch anything without, you know, I don't know how people with children even watch anything. I mean, I think you'd about have to just...
Yeah, turn off TV.
Yeah, about cut the cord off. June, we're going to be right back. We'll call Nansu on the break, and we'll be back with both of you at the top of the hour.
Great.
So, for folks listening in, we're here with June, and pretty soon we'll be here with Nansu. I think you'll love the second hour. Well, maybe not love it, but you'll sure be, you'll have your eyes open. How's that?
You'll vote socialism when it's all done.
Yeah, or not. You can join us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer, and they're on Twin View Boulevard, 3119 Twin View, just south of Phil's Propeller, and they do everything tractor. So if you need repairs or need a new tractor or just want to go up and talk to them about tractors, go up and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com. That's Team Power.
Ding.
Ding.
Very good, Bill. So, let's see. Thanks to our other folks who sponsor the show as individuals or small groups. Appreciate that.
Yeah, it's funny. We have several people that want to remain nameless but support the show and just listen every week.
Thanks a million.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We would love to hear from you, too. We don't do a lot of call-ins on the show, obviously, but it kind of derails things, so we don't do a lot of that.
Well, an expert, and you know, that's our deal. We let them talk.
But if you've got ideas on what we should,
you know, what we should cover, topics, people. You've read a great book and you thought the author would be interesting. Heard them on the radio, but they were only on for 2 seconds or TV or whatever. Get a hold of us. You can find all our contact information at wethepeopleradio.us. And we have free archives that are on there of all the programs back into 2010. It costs you nothing to listen. You should be able to download them unless the archives go haywire like they did last week. But then just get a hold of us right away and we'll get it fixed. Yeah. But no charge for that. And the commercials have been taken out thanks to Robert Exter. So a little team effort we got going on here. All right, second hour. We're into a topic that Bill and I know nothing about. So we're going to count on...
Well, only what I've been told.
Yeah.
And it's frightening.
It's super scary.
It's very scary.
So we have... And I haven't put a whole lot on online. I should let you know that I did update the webpage with Shen Yun, I don't know if we call it a musical. It's a giant production. But I did put that on there. So if you were listening while you were driving or something like that, the link for that is on there. And the 45 goals from the Naked Communist to overthrow the United States that we were discussing, that is also on there.
And that was in
1958?
Yeah,
58. So we knew that this was all going on a long time ago, and here we go. We're going to give it a little try. We're just going to dabble
give it
on
a little whirl. Oh, and we noticed one over the... not to rabbit trail here too hard, but it was get the students, use student riots to foment public protests against programs or organizations which are under communist attack. It's like, oh, check that one off too. Yeah. We can check a lot of these off. So we have Nan Su with us this hour, and we're talking about organ harvesting. I'll just do the spoiler alert. That's the extent of my information. So, June, why don't you give us an introduction on this so that poor Nancy doesn't have to introduce himself?
Yeah, talking about team effort, Bill. So it is my pleasure to introduce my friend, Nancy. Now, he is a reporter from an independent newspaper called The Epoch Times. Now, if you're looking for a newspaper with no socialism, no communism, and just pure American journalism, I would say look no further. Check out, you know, the Epoch Times, and then people call it independent, fearless, real issues. Then people even, you know, compare it as oxygen. You know, it's like oxygen to them. The true independent news these days is so rare.
Sure.
But anyway, I came to know Nan Su a few years ago. He and I are both human rights advocates. And I know that Nan Su specializes in... the organ harvesting, the case that he's been giving that talk to many of the groups in Bay Area for a long time. So I thought it would be a great idea to bring him, you know, to the show and just to further talk about the brutality and deceit of communism that I've, you know, mentioned earlier in the first half of the show.
Great.
So, Nan?
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me, everyone.
Well, thanks for being on. This topic is something I don't think people know a whole lot about, and looking forward to what you have.
Well, you know, I have been a news commentator for NTD TV, and especially about news in and out of China, really about what's going on in China, because our media was established by the... students and scholars who came out of China and, you know, trying to have independent news channel to give news in and out of China. Talking about the organ harvesting from live prisoners of conscience, I'm not sure if you guys heard about in June of 2016, the U.S. Congress had a resolution. It was called a House Resolution 343, which was unanimously passed by the American Congress, which so stated in the resolution that the Chinese government has been systematic state-sanctioned organ harvesting from non-consenting prisoners of conscience in the People's Republic of China, including large number of Falun Gong practitioners and members of other religious and ethnic minority groups, quote-unquote. That was so stated in the Resolution 343. by U.S. Congress in June of 2016, and also U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom on the 2016 report, which summarized activities in 2015, also stated imprisoned Falun Gong practitioners are particularly targeted for organ harvesting. And there's other reports about organ harvesting, forced organ harvesting from live prisoners of conscience. Now, the reason that Falun Gong practitioners was specifically mentioned in many of these reports was because Falun Gong was such a large group, under the persecution. To give you some numbers, some ideas about the kind of a percentage we're talking about, comparing with the other groups. Now, in 2006, the United Nations Special Report on Torture and the Cruel Inhumane Treatments of Prisoners of Conscience, they have this statistic which says the Falun Gong practitioners as a victim group, the victim population of Falun Gong is about 7,200 million. And Uyghur groups, about 15 million. Uyghur group. Uyghur group was a Chinese Muslim group. And Tibetan, Uyghur groups are about 15 million. And Tibetan Buddhism group was about 7.8 million. And house church Christians, as much less. So, percentage-wise, the victim population in China, Falun Gong group made up about over 66%, and Uyghur group was about 11%, and Tibetans about 6%, and the House Christian group was about 2%. So those are the group of prisoners of conscience that's been under the persecution by Chinese government. So what they did was, there's a few reports talk about how these groups, they are, the prisoners of these groups, they are jailed, they are in prison or in the labor camp. And the Chinese government, what they did was basically they just kill these people and they just forcibly take their organs away. And they, they sell them. At the beginning, they start selling them, to most of the customers were foreigners. They, because they have a very long waiting time if they're outside of China. So they, so by their own choice, they will go to China to receive livers, kidneys, hearts. They will receive all these, transplants. The earliest investigation was actually conducted by two Canadian citizens. One is his name is David Kilgore, who was the former Canadian Secretary of State in the Asia Pacific region, and another his partner was named David Matas, who was an international human rights lawyer. So they call it the new evil on earth, because, they basically took a large population of their own people, they put them in jail because of what they believe, and then they forcibly take their organs away and, just sold them for profit.
That's unbelievable that would be. How could you even think of doing something like that?
We have to take a really quick break. There is no good time to take a really quick break, but I'm updating the website kind of as we go, because I'm going to say I'm guessing most Americans have, and I don't know where other people listen all around the world, but the Falun Gong is spelled FALUNGONG if you're looking that up and trying to figure that out. I'm going to add some articles, and I know you guys are going to send me some things after the show to post so that people can learn about that, because for most people, they have no idea what that even means. So maybe we could do a little backstory on that when we come back. You know, what is that and why are these people targeted? Because I personally don't understand why they would be targets. And it sounds like it's bad anyway, regardless. So we'll be right back with Nan Sue. And we have June held hostage in there with us still for the second hour. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us. Have a little mental health break there for 2 minutes.
I take a breath there. You know.
Okay, Nancy, we have a lot of questions.
Yeah, we're talking about organ harvesting from prisoners, and
but how did they become prisoners?
I thought they were, you know, harvesting like you have two kidneys, we'll take one of them, but they're actually harvesting organs that you pretty much got to have to survive. So
I mean, if they're harvesting hearts,
they're killing people.
That's a final harvest,
dissecting them and stealing the parts. Yeah. Mind-boggling.
Sorry for freaking out.
Yeah, it was a really mind-boggling. One of these investigations. Israel was one of the earliest nation. The first nation who actually banned, not really banned, but they say, well, if you are going to decide to go to China to have organ transplant, then basically their medical insurance is not going to cover you. And the reason was they find out that because in early times they found their own citizens, you know, going to China to receive kidney transplant, which they thought that's the same way you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then later they found that their patients going to China to receive like heart transplant.
So this isn't being done for Chinese people. Not that it would be okay then either, but this is being they have like a worldwide market.
That's right. Yeah. That's a worldwide market, and that's how the Israel start the doctors and the medical societies in Israel. They realized there's something serious wrong going on over there. So they pass. They passed some sort of ordinance and legislature early on to ban the people. Oh, they can't ban the people, but they just say, oh, if you go to China to receive organ transplant, then, you know, your medical insurance is not going to cover it.
Oh, are there other countries that, I mean, I'm sure in that community, it's probably well known that this is going on in China. But do other countries, I mean, do they allow their people to go to China to get a transplant? Because you know where it's coming from. But I guess you're right. They couldn't really stop them from going over there. But is this something that's, hugely popular? A lot of people do it?
Actually, a lot of people from all over the world went to China because they have such a short waiting time.
Sure.
You know, early on, all the way until 2008, even 2009, when the patients call China, usually they will promise you a liver or kidney transplant within a week. And also,
they have already supply.
Yeah, you see, if you have patients in your family or friends or relatives in the U.S., if they want to, they need to wait for organ transplant, kidneys, livers, it's like a years of... Right?
But you can't go over there and get one from China if you know people are dying for it. I don't know how anybody in good conscience could participate well, in
apparently
that.
There's a market, so conscience is in short supply. Explain to us again.
More than that, what happened was actually in Taiwan and some of the Asian countries like South Korea, they actually have organized some of the specialized travel agency. They will organize the organ transplant group. They will all, go to China together. They will stay at the hospital. They will arrange the hotel for the relatives. And then they all, they all in a month or so, they will come back. Hopefully most of them will come back if the operation is successful. Then, that's kind of because it's a very short period of waiting time for them to receive the transplant.
Yeah, wow, you could give somebody a kidney for Christmas, and we'll go over and pick it up.
I'm sure that list is just like that's just the hot list for hell right there. If you want to sign up for hell, there you go. I got a way to do it. So explain to us.
Well, going back to your question, though, you asked why these people were persecuted.
Yes, please.
Why these people were put in jail. Now let's go back. I think that there's a lot of people living in the United States. They really don't have a deep understanding what the life is about. Living under such a communist.
No, we have no clue.
Right.
Not
now,
even a hint.
Well, there are a few points that we need to talk about. First of all, the communist movement. Everywhere they go, the communist movement touched, they will always destroy the traditional values that happened in Soviet Union. It happened in all the, former communist nations in the Eastern European countries. And it happened in like China, North Korea, and Cambodia, Vietnam, all these countries. But they take in different forms. Now let's talk about the Falun Gong, this group, a little bit.
Yeah, who are they, and why them?
Yeah, how come they're in trouble all the time?
Right. Yeah, Falun Gong was a traditional meditation exercise. It's deeply rooted in traditional Chinese culture, very similar to many of the Buddhist discipline meditation. It's not even considered religion, but they do. Now, this is the key. They do have three principles. That's called truth, compassion, and tolerance. If you think about it, for Christians, if you are true Christians holding the traditional Christian values, those are the three principles also practiced by a Christian, many other religions.
But none of those really make a good communist.
That's correct. Now, there was many people asking why they are persecuted. Why? Now, a lot of people should put them side by side with Tai Chi. I'm not sure you've ever heard of the practice of Tai Chi, the soft or slow movement. Of Tai Chi. It's very popular. It's also, you see, millions and millions of people doing those things, like in the morning over the park and the public space. And a lot of people wonder why Falun Gong was persecuted while Tai Chi is allowed, right? And that go back to the key, we talk about the three principles. Now, Tai Chi, if you do these comparisons, it's very obvious why all these prisoners of conscience from all different faith communities are persecuted. Now, Tai Chi was originally from Taoist philosophy. It was originally from a Taoist temple. Now, however, when Tai Chi was introduced to the public, it cut its tie from Taoist philosophy. So most of the people, only, I would say 99.999% of people who practicing Tai Chi, they only doing the body movement part. So basically, it's not different than a power walk, or you go into the gym,
right,
or you practice, like if you go to Lamas class, people will teach you like a medical Qigong, right? That's like a breathe exercise.
So, it's basically an exercise, has no tie to religion.
That's right. So Tai Chi, it's really, there's no values. you know, that goes with the practice of Tai Chi. Mm. While Falun Gong, it's got the three principles of truth, compassion, and tolerance. So that is what Chinese government start persecuting it, because that's what, no, and it's the same reason they persecuted the Christianity in China. They persecuted Tibetan Buddhism or the Uyghurs group, any other religious group. It's really, they don't want you to have your own value system, and that they are go after it. So that's how, you know, Falun Gong was introduced to the public in 1992, and by 1999, the Chinese government's own statistic showing it's like a close to 100 million people practicing in China, which is which our number, total membership of Chinese Communist Party. And it's, in the beginning, the government actually encouraged the society doing that because it's such a huge medical benefit. A lot of people, they practice it, they got a better health, you know, they you know, some of the disease, and, you know, the practitioners practice this exercise, they get well. So it actually saves a lot of medical costs for the government. So at the beginning, they really encourage it. And later, they saw all people all over the country practicing it, and all of a sudden, they have their own value system now.
Oh, they got off.
Yeah.
They escaped the reservation.
So that's how the government started persecuting it. And then, because there was such a huge population practicing it, then the government start, you know, persecuting it, and then, you know, all these, because such a huge population they put in jail, all of a sudden they have a huge reserve of organs on the live people's body, right? So that's how all these things start happening. Now, of course, it didn't only happen to Falun Gong practitioners also. It also, you know, it's a lot of religious groups or faith groups that have a serious concern about it, because they all have the reports, you know, showing them that they have people missing in jail. So the investigation has been going for a long time, and there's not only that report we mentioned on, and there's a few other reports. One of them is called, if you call the investigation of War Organization of investigating persecution of Falun Gong, if you go to that website, there's a lot of report and available, and then actually investigation was led by a doctor who came to United States, Dr. Wang Ziyuan, who came to United States in 1995. He was a research fellow in Harvard School of Public Health. And before he came to United States, he was one of the members of a Central National Military Medical Society of China. So he actually came to the United States early on, 1995, and he led this investigation, which, you know, found a huge amount of evidence.
No more
questions. We have to take a really quick break.
Okay, I got a burning question.
I know. We have all these burning questions. And I'm looking at it. We have 30 minutes left. We're not going to have enough time. All right. We'll be right back with Nan Su and Silent June. I'll have June pop in again. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Actually, bigger than caffeine. We decided, Nancy, if you're driving and you're really tired, you should listen to shows about this topic, because it just, I mean,
Wow.
Our minds are racing. Okay.
So wait,
I want to know really easy. If you wind up getting snatched off the street because they accidentally found out you were thinking outside the box, do you stay there forever? I mean, is this a, do people get imprisoned for periods of time?
Actually get a term, or do they just...
Are they just there forever?
Well, if you are practicing something the government doesn't like, then, you know, usually what they do is they will put you in jail or prison, or some sort of, you know, a brainwash class. They will ask you to denounce whatever you practice or whatever you believe. So, you know, if, using Falun Gong as an example, what they do is they will ask you to denounce what you believe, which is a, you know, very painful process for a lot of people. If you truly believe something.
Sure.
And then they will let you go. Or if you, you refuse to denounce what you believe, they will keep you in there. Now, especially now, for some of the brainwash class, they don't have to really go through any of the legal process to put you in there. And then it will, they will keep you in there as long as they want. So you really don't have any way, really trying to, you know, get yourself out there.
Right. There's no legal system in place.
So yeah. you get sent in there, and you have healthy organs. I mean, they have nothing but. I mean, they've got a lot of choices. They don't have to answer to anybody. There's no due process. So basically, they have all the people there to pick from. And, yeah, somebody brought up during, you know, when we were on break, it's like, this is actually a weird form, a super creepy form of capitalism. I mean, they're just, they're making money off this whole thing.
It's called national capitalism.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's no different than, you know, it's a government operation.
Sure.
Yeah.
The people usually talk about, the kind of like illegal organ transplants that it happened in many of the countries such as India, Mexico, but those are not government government organized the coin.
Right, right.
Except that this is, in China, it's really a government organized the coin.
And how many?
There's no way you can investigate them because the military. And because also because the military, the health department, also the you know, the trade, also there's a lot of like a State Department, there's a lot of you know, all government department agencies all get involved in this process. How are you going to investigate?
Yeah, you're right. Not.
Yeah, you don't want to stick your nose into something that's going to end
up join them.
So how many people? I'm not sure how long this has been going on, but how many people are affected by this program? Do they have any numbers on the, you know, the amount of people that are being processed?
They don't have actually. You know, it's very hard actually to actually have a number to make an estimation of this scale. With the Chinese government still in power, but we do have some government, Chinese government statistics by its own that shows how massive this scale is. For example, by Chinese government's own statistics, between 1991 and 1998, that 8 years, China only the liver transplant, okay, the liver transplant was only, they had, the 8 years, they only have 78 cases of liver transplant. So keep in mind, 1999 was the benchmark because 1999 was the year the Chinese government started persecution of Falun Gong.
Right.
Right? So from 1999 to 2006, that's also 8 years. There's also 8 years comparing with the previous 8 years, that's 78 cases of total liver transplant. But from 1999 to 2006, you know how many liver transplants they got? 14,085 cases of total liver transplant. So you compare with the 8 years before the persecution of Falun Gong and the 8 years after the persecution of Falun Gong started, you know, you got like from 78 cases to more than 14,000 cases.
Wow.
So 14,000 statistic given by Chinese government itself.
Wow. And that's just livers.
That's just only talking about the livers. There was a, if you log into the World Organization of Investigating Persecution of Falun Gong, you log into that site, they have a lot more evidence. You know, I only have the time to mention a few numbers here.
Right. That's incredible, from 78 to 14,000. And then when you factor in, you know, hearts, kidneys, you know, all the rest of it, sounds like mass production.
Yeah, also, there's a, actually, there's something happening in our community, too. Yeah, ever heard of the exhibition of Body War?
No.
It goes around, and you know, in many nations in the Western world, it's called Body War exhibition. Basically, you know, they take human body and they do the plasticization of a human body, and then after the human body is plastination, and then they will, you know, they take these samples all away, you know, all around the world, and you know that the Body War exhibition was started by a German a medical professional. His name was Von Hagens, and you know, he went to China. You know, when he built his factory of human body plastination, that was August of 1999, just 1 month
after interesting
the
timing
of Chinese of Falun Gong started. You know, he built it, and there was a bunch of investigation about how he built the human body plastination in China, how he got all these bodies. You know, there was a human body and there was also organs, right? It go both different ways. So while the organs are taken, the prisoners of conscience are killed, and their bodies and also, you know, used by these companies. Then they actually export. You know, you think about take a human body and then export it to all around the world. And it actually, you know, it involved a lot of, you know, transportation agency, custom, you know, there's a lot of agencies.
Sure.
And there was another company. It's actually an American company, a NASDAQ company. It's called Premier Exhibition, who have in years have also doing this this kind of exhibition, a displayed human body. And then that company actually put a disclaimer on their own website to say the exhibits display human remains of Chinese citizens or residents which were originally received by the Chinese Bureau of Police. The Chinese Bureau of Police may receive bodies from Chinese prisons. And Premier is this the name of this exhibition. It says, Premier cannot independently verify the human remains you are viewing are not those of persons who were incarcerated in Chinese prisons. So they put their disclaimer in there because they knew these things going on.
Well, there was a, I don't know, it might have been a couple of years ago, they had one of those exhibitions in New York. And it received quite a bit of controversy.
That's one of those, too, that Nansoon just mentioned.
Yeah.
That's the one he's saying.
Yeah, that's I remember that. That was, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I think there was a few media agents, major media agencies actually sent their own reporters, you know, who went to China to do the independent investigation, which, you know, there's a lot of results they reveal, so which I don't have time to cover it. But there's a lot of those things, you know, actually going on, not just in China, but also around the world related to the persecution of prisoners' conscience in China, also related to the forced live organ harvesting in China.
So just out of curiosity, do the people in China even know this?
Actually, you know, a lot of the people, like Chinese students who came out of China, studying in the U.S., I talked to many of them. Actually, they say they never heard of it. A few of them, you know, actually say they heard of it, which is a similar case. Like if you go to, I think in 2009 was like, 20 years of a Tiananmen Square massacre. And some of the Western medias will send their reporters to the major universities in China and ask the students in the colleges, and ask any of them know the Tiananmen Square massacre, or ask them if they know what June 4th was the day of Tiananmen Square massacre. They ask them, do you know what June 4th means to you? And most of the students, you know, they never heard of it.
Yeah, no, don't have a clue.
Because, yeah, you're talking about, you know, the white power memory of a whole generation. You know, they grew up, nothing in the textbook, nothing their parents even dare to talk about.
Well, no, because that's not going to be part of their history.
Totally forgot.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I'm sorry to be the fun killer, but we have to have one more break here before the top of the hour. We're going to come back with June and Nan Su. And if you have just tuned in, you can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. And the archive of this show will be up by about 2:10, 2:15. Okay, so we're you've rerouted our entire world. we're not going to sleep for a week.
well,
I hope you're happy.
I want Nancy to explain, Aaron, a little bit about not only the Chinese people do not know about this, but also they have some misconception about this group of Falun Gong that he talked about earlier. I think this will go back to the other talking point that I said earlier about deceit. So, Nan, can you kind of explain how suddenly, when this group was so popular in China, suddenly over the night people started hating it and chose to be on the government side?
Right. You know, when Chinese government started the persecution against this group in July of 1999, the persecution itself, it was, you know, not acceptable to most of the society in China, because people know them, right? You know, you got 100 million people practicing, they have families, friends, they all know these are, you know, nice people. So the persecution, met a lot of resistance from the society all the way until January of 2001. So what the government did was they fabricated. There's a bunch of a few Falun Gong practitioners who went to Tiananmen Square, which to most of the Chinese people consider as the heart of the nation. It's like, you know, just right in front of the Washington Monument, you know, in the U.S. Right, that's the part. You know, it's the same like to a. Symbol-wise, it's to a lot of Chinese people, Tiananmen Square at that place. So what they did was they fabricated. There was a few Falun Gong practitioners who went to that place, and they did self-immolation. They burned themselves. So that, you know, that was the point the government successfully, changed the public opinions against the Falun Gong. But however, after the self-immolation took place, there's a few Western medias went to China, and then they chased down to all these the people, based on the report of Chinese state-owned media that say these people are Falun Gong practitioners, but they actually found those people are not Falun Gong practitioners. Basically, it was made up by the government. There's actually a movie.
Oh.
It's called Force of Fire. Everyone can go online and log and trying to. It's a free on the internet. It's called Force of Fire. It actually got an excellent documentary award by Columbia. It was a movie festival called Columbia Movie Festival. So what they did was the movie took the government, report from CCTV, that's China's state-owned central TV station. They took the news report and they did the slow motion replay of China's CCTV report, and they found all kind of loopholes in there. They, basically it's very convincing. So that was a setup. There was a government organized the event, so they have a media waiting right there at the people when they start trying to burn themselves. So that was a setup.
Wow, and it obviously worked.
It worked, yeah. It actually turned the public opinion around, and then the people start, so that's how they start, the persecution went very fast after that.
Yeah, because you would think if people were willing to light themselves on fire, that people would say, there might be something going on there, but no.
Yeah, what they used was like the technique that they used on the Tiananmen Square propaganda. They broadcast around the clock. There was no other way for you to know the truth.
Right.
So for people who initially had doubts, after, watching this for over a month, you kind of tend to change your perception. And like, oh, yeah, this group might be evil, might be as well, just like what the government described.
Wow.
And then later I heard that they killed all those the fake Falun Gong people that they paid them to ask them to sit there. And then I heard that how they did was really put a gasoline in the empty soda box and bottles and put those bottles in between their legs. And then they ignited and then they shot at the first hand. And then they later, I heard, Nancy, maybe you know this better, but they said, hey, it was CNN or some other Western media did it, shot the entire thing. And then the Western media said, you didn't even allow us to go to Tiananmen Square at that time. How could we get the footage of that?
Wow.
Total control. Total control.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to say it's crazy, but it's obviously happening, so it's not that crazy.
It is. And I want to say that, the purpose of bringing this up is not, it's really to expose the true nature of communism.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I really want a general American, the public to really to wake up to understand its fact. The fact is, sometimes communism uses slaughter and violence on those who refuse to follow it. And in this case, in many of the communist countries. However, other times it uses the slogans of democracy, equality, social justice to infiltrate the fields of our education, media, art, law, and bringing people under its banner without them even knowing it. But,
right.
You just need to wake up, look around, and then read those fortified goals of the communism, overthrowing the United States. It will give you a striking realization. You look at how many of those goals have been realized over the course of the past 60 years. And then remember this. Stalin once said that America is like a healthy body, and its resistance is threefold. It's patriotism, it's morality, and it's spiritual life. And if we can't undermine these three areas, America will collapse from within. So if you look at all the chaos of today in our world and in our country, which is horribly divided, you look at all those, and I think, you can trace back to the destruction of patriotism, the destruction of morality, and the destruction of spiritual life. It is exactly happening as what Stalin said many, many years ago. And
right.
This goal of communism, of overthrowing the United States, is being realized as we speak.
Right.
And we as a nation, we need to wake up to understand that.
Yeah, this isn't just some little popular thing, you know. I mean, I think they look at some of these people like Ocasio-Cortez there in New York as like kind of a curiosity.
Well, some of them, yeah, but they look at her like, you know, she's going to be the new face. She's going to be the new face of the Democrats.
But I think people outside of that think, well, that's crazy. Nobody's really going to do that. Right. Let's not get hysterical. It's like, I don't know.
As it slowly gets a bigger foothold.
Read this list. You read the list of 45 things, then listen to Nan Su's information about what happens once communism takes hold and the kinds of things they can get away with. I don't know. That might be sobering.
And then note American history, what it takes
good point.
To build this nation. It's, you know, and everyone can be swayed by those high-sounding words. I mean, that was how 100 years ago Russian and in Chinese followed those two, the communist regime leaders, and then decided to go on this path. Everyone loved those utopia, you know, the description of the utopia. But at what cost? And look at the results.
Yeah, look at the cost. Absolutely.
Oh, my
gosh. Thank you. We're running out of time.
We're out of time, but both of you, we so appreciate your information, and I already sent you an email. I think we have to do another show. we seriously rushed through all this, and there is so much more. There's so much we don't know. We would appreciate the information, and email me anything you'd like on the page for today, and that way our listeners can go and get smart. I've been adding things. False fire, I added the video link for folks. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Sunday, both of you, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thanks for being on.
Thanks a million. You've been listening to We the People. You can find all of the information and the recording of this show at wethepeopleradio.us.